Longest running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa. Taking care of business and working overtime. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program tonight. I'm Don Soa. Thanks for joining us during your drive time home. I've had some people asking me, says, oh, they've seen a couple of lousy or triple-digit days to the downside. So they're wondering, oh, my gosh, has this, the wonderful bull market that we've been enjoying all this time, has this finally come to an end? Has it topped out? Is it at the end of the cycle? I said, no, you got to look back at market behavior. And I'm the last person on the planet to tell you to look at short-term trends. You know, what did the market do in a given week or a month or a given period? But you know something, if you do look back from, say, 2009 through where we are now in 2017, you're going to find there are periods of time in there, even in years that finished up pretty solid for the market at the end of the year, where there were pullbacks, we called them. A bear market is a bear market, that phrase in my mind suggests a trend where economic conditions and market-oriented conditions, valuation conditions, are such that the natural direction for this market is to go down. And it's a trend. It takes place over a period of time. So when I hear the term bear market, I'm not thinking of something that happens in a 2 or 3 day period or 1 week period. Although I have heard periods where, like the crash of 1987 that happened on Black Friday, Black Monday, a couple of days, the market lost a third of its value. That was, and I've heard it many times, described as a bear market back in 87. But what happens is after the event occurs, and there's usually specific set of events that created, there were some catalysts that caused that major sell-off, including some regular technical catalysts. But then the market recovered after that. Now, again, you've got to be careful with this type of a discussion because when you have a bear market or if you have a sizable correction, the market recovery doesn't have to be immediate. It's not like a V shape where it drops, 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 and then it hits the bottom, then it jumps like a V back into recovery. We've seen occasions where it almost looked a little more like a hockey stick. You know, look at this player. He's got the stick with the blade on the ice, and the market goes down, then it hits the ice. And then it moves sideways a little bit, looking like a hockey stick. And then maybe at some point moves higher. And sometimes it can be jumpy. In other words, it moves a little bit higher, then down, then a little bit higher. So the high, and each high is a little bit higher. So if you look back, if you step back from it and look at it over the course of a year, yeah, it's a generally upward trend. But it's more like a staircase than it is a hill, you know, like a line going straight up. So you've got to be careful when you talk about markets. When you look back at a market and look at it over a lengthy time period, you can see a really favorable trend. But it's very common, even in very good years, when you're in a general bull market phase of the market, a general recovery phase within the economy, to have what we call a pullback. A correction is a decline from the top of 10% or more. When it breaks to 20% a decline, then we start talking about bear market territory. Now, if the market were to drop 3 or 4% and then recover, or 2 or 3% and recover, we've actually seen years where you saw three of those trends during the course of a year, where you had two or three pullbacks, the market pulls back and then goes higher. Now, sometimes it's a mechanical thing. It depends on the attitude of those folks in the market that we call traders. These are not investors. These are people who jump in and jump out. But many times what they're doing is, and in some cases, even a person with a slightly longer attitude about the market, slightly longer trend in their minds, they may go in if they see a 3 or 4% decline in a sector or an index or perhaps an individual stock that they like very much. They might watch it drop 4%, then jump in. In other words, they're buying it at a particular point. So they say, hey, listen, it's a 4% discount. They jump in, and then if the next move is up, the market recovers that 4%, then goes up to plus one. So maybe they've just made a 5% short-term gain on their investment. And then what do they do? They pull out. Now, if they're doing that inside of an IRA, it's not as costly from a tax perspective because you're not incurring, you know, the short-term capital gain treatment that you would have if this was a taxable account, like an individual account or a joint account. The taxable accounts, you know, the trading costs of jumping in and out, and perhaps the tax liability of having that gain. Let's say you're good enough to enjoy a gain in that strategy, but unfortunately it's going to be a short-term capital gain, which means you're going to be taxed at the highest rate you pay. Got to think these things through. And who is this for? Who am I talking to? I'm talking to the do-it-yourselfer. There are a lot of you out there that enjoy doing your own research. You enjoy reading the financial news. You listen to programs, hopefully like the Money Talk program, where we try to educate you as to how the market works, as well as focusing a lot of attention on the risks and the costs of being an investor. I don't want you to come up with a great strategy that you think is going to be is very fruitful and helpful to make a lot of money without understanding the costs and the risks that go along with that. Taxes are a cost. If it's a taxable portfolio, an individual account, say, you got to be aware that if you're jumping in and jumping out, and whether you're using a computer program that tells you when to do the buy and the sell, and there's some of them out there, you know, the cost of the program may be one factor. The trading transactional costs, if you're using a discount brokerage type account, you're self-directing it, you're doing it yourself. And then, of course, if it's a taxable portfolio, like many of those trading accounts or the day trading type ones, yeah, you're dealing with the highest level of capital gains tax treatment. But, I mean, that's simply the nature of the beast. The markets have, you know, after having had a wonderful year so far, the last 12 months really has been pretty phenomenal for the stock market. And, yes, the president has taken credit for that. It's consistent with the time frame. But, you know, the market's been pretty good for the last few years, too. We're in an environment where the economy has been growing, not dramatically fast, but it's been growing consistently. And the market has reflected that. The market's not always a perfect mirror of the economy, but a lot of times it's fairly reflective. You can see if you're getting a good economy, it's not unusual for you to have a relatively good equity-oriented market. In other words, buying for ownership. That's what equity investing typically is. You have an equity interest or a ownership position in a particular company, or a group of companies if you're doing it through an index or a mutual fund. So lots of different ways to do it. Right now, after a couple of really lousy days in this period, maybe a little bit of a pullback, guess what? Stock market rose today after consecutive declines. We saw some strength in individual companies that helped drive things higher with Cisco and Walmart. But the Dow was up, after all that, up 187 points. It was up over 200 at one point. Cisco and Walmart were the leaders. The S&P added 8.82%, so it's just shy of 1%. The NASDAQ, of course, technology-oriented, outperformed. It was up about 1.3% in just today's trading. Walmart reported better-than-expected quarterly earnings in revenue, sending the stock market, the stock itself, 10.9% higher. That's Walmart. That's pretty good for a retail stock, huh? Walmart's not like other retail companies, let's face it. But they're higher. It's at an all-time high right now, as you might well imagine. It's trading around $99, almost $100 a share now, up $9.79 a share today, which is almost 11%. The company's results were boosted by a surge in grocery and online sales, another area that they've moved into with some efficiency. Overall, the third quarter result suggests that investments continue to favorably impact comp growth, competitive, comps, we call it comparative. And it shows that Walmart is effectively competing in a very, very tough retail environment, according to analysts over at Stifel, a guy named Mark Astrachan. He offered a note to his investors and to the other companies. Also, Cisco reported earnings and revenue. It beat Wall Street's expectations as well. See, that's the whole thing. Meeting expectations doesn't apparently move the markets in any meaningful way. The company has to come in and surprise investors, surprise analysts, saying, oh, the top line revenue and the bottom line net profit per share was a lot better than people thought. Well, of course, Cisco was lifted in part by some strong sales of their software applications. So here's a genuine tech company, Cisco Systems. Cisco's shares actually were up about 5.2% today. Now, stocks are bouncing back this morning in what is proving to be a year of amazing resilience for the asset class. And, bears have got to be very careful. The bears sometimes will roar or growl, but they're not really, really loud. Nick Raich, who's the CEO over at Earnings Scout, one of the online firms, He said that market bears, people who have bearish tendencies, and perhaps invest in a way that are intended to take advantage of negative market movement, what you might get in a bear market. Market bears had one eye open yesterday, but are probably slipping back into hibernation now as the temperatures get colder here in the north. Before Thursday's rebound today, the major stock indices had fallen in their previous two sessions as concerns about politics, tax reform, or lack thereof, and a pullback in commodities really had investors a little bit worried. We did have a vote today, of course, on the tax bill in the House of Representatives. If we have time on today's show, we did get some requests coming in for people to actually explain what happened. Are there any winners and losers in this particular tax bill? What's in it? Can we understand it? Is it meaningful before they actually submit this bill over to the Senate, where we'll eventually get marked up and they'll do whatever it is that they want to do to turn into something that they can vote on, I guess. Global stocks also rebounded today. Europe, you had the Stock 600, their index, it was up about 0.8%. Asian markets also closed higher. The Nikkei in Japan advancing about 1.5%, pretty substantial. And the South Korean Kospi, K-O-S-P-I, they gained about 0.7%. Now, it would, you'd expect to rebound after several days of declines in some people's minds. There are some people that are going to jump in and view this as a buying opportunity when you've seen a little bit of a drop. Not a major buying opportunity, but a small one. But some people said, hey, that's enough. Sri Kumar is the president of Sri Kumar Global Strategies. He also noted that investors should remain alert as uncertainty surrounding global central banks. The Brexit still is out there in people's conversation. Great Britain leaving the European Union and the politics that go along with that. In other words, it's not something that just happened overnight, is it? It's something that's going to be dragged out a long time. Those things still remain as issues. And he says that he would not get too excited about the rally we had today. I wouldn't necessarily assume then by that conversation, and quite frankly, by some of the comments we've heard from a number of different people, that today's rather exciting market movement, very close between 0.8% and maybe 1% growth in market recovery after a couple of lousy days, this may not necessarily be the start of another new trend. We'll wait and see. We'll see what happens tomorrow. A lot of people don't like to get into the weekend with tremendously long positions unless they're pretty confident. Hey, folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program. I am Don Sowa. If you have a call, we have a phone number here, 437-5000 is our local number, 437-5000. And if outside the area, 888-345-0790. That's toll-free, 888-345-0790. Talk to Maya. She's a nice person. She will not bite, and she will take your question. And if you can't chat and stay on the line, she'll just plug it into my screen here and make sure I address your question before you get to your destination. I'll be right back, so please stick around.
Sponsored by ShopVac. Got a big mess that needs to be cleaned up? Hurry down to Lowe's to pick up your ShopVac brand wet-dry vacuum with new advanced motor technology, starting at just $79.
If it's time to replace your old, aging, fuel-wasting boiler, you need a specialist. You need New England Boiler Works, your boiler replacement and oil-to-gas conversion specialist, serving residential and small commercial properties with free estimates, one-day installations, and financing. New England Boiler Works has your new money-saving boiler. And ask about Navien on-demand water heaters with rebate. So call New England Boiler Works today at 401-256-9249 or neboilerworksri.com.
Hey folks, Kevin here from Bruno & Co. Auctioneers. We are having an on-site auction of the Alden Estate at 294 Pequot Avenue in Warwick this Saturday, November 18th at 11 a.m. under a heated tent. Doors are open at 9 a.m. for preview. With over 700 lots of paintings, furniture, jewelry, and decorative arts, this is a great sale. Call 401-533-9980 for more information or visit us online at brunoandco.com.
That's B-R-U-N-E-A-U.
Don't do what I did and run out.
If it's working, don't quit. Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished?
You've got to feed them right for life.
Dynavite
is nutrition.
If I ever took Roy off of Dynavite.
No.
When I get to about 3/4.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite.
Oh, no. I've got a couple more scoops.
It's time to place my order. Dynavite.com.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite for your dog this week.
We'll send you a bottle of Super Mega fish oil free.
Packed with omega-3, DHA, and EPA fatty acids.
Super Mega is great for your dog's immune system, healthy skin, and soft, shiny fur.
Try Super Omega Fish Oil.
Free this week at Dynavite.com.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Welcome to the Maya and Miguel Challenge. Meet Maya and the gang.
Oh, hi. I'm Maya.
Maya and her friends want you to get up and play because it's always more fun to be active.
Let's get started.
Just go to letsmove.gov and look for Maya and Miguel. You'll find tons of fun activities that'll help keep you healthy and active. Whether you play sports, run, dance, or jump in place, just get up and play at least an hour a day. Take the Maya and Miguel Challenge today at letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Bye-bye.
Farewell. With Journey Rewards checking from Navigant Credit Union, you can say goodbye to ATM fees. In fact, we'll refund any fees up to $25 a month. With Journey Checking, you'll pay no monthly fees at all while earning one of the highest interest rates around. Stop by any Navigant Credit Union branch location or visit us online at NavigantCU.org to learn more about Journey Rewards checking. Navigant Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Well, if you were listening to some or watching television at all, you saw groups of people that looked like politicians, you know, jumping up and down and smiling and everything, because in their own minds they are looking at potentially a major victory. The news was whether or not the House of Representatives, which is a fairly large body, whether they were able to pass, you know, legislation related to the upcoming tax bill, tax reform that they've been struggling with. Well, the president and GOP House Speaker Paul Ryan, at least for the time being, you know, we'll offer the news as it is, are celebrating a pretty major victory. The House did pass the tax bill, of course, this is the House's tax bill, after some negotiation and as it's currently written. There was some negotiation behind closed doors in committee. The central piece of the Republican plan to boost the U.S. economy is the tax bill. There were no Democrats voting in favor of the bill. The Speaker Ryan had the luxury of losing 22 GOP voters. In other words, 22 members of the House could have voted against it. But in the end, he lost about 13 of them. So he had about 8 or 9 leeway, a little bit of leeway with about 8 or 9 of them. So they were able to convince some of the ones who were holdouts and some of the ones that had already stated that they probably were not inclined to vote for the bill the way that it was written. I guess enough of them changed their mind at the end. A little bit of arm twisting going on by the whip and maybe even by the president. Although the suggestion has been that the president, you know, of course, having been out of town last couple of weeks also on his Asia trip, didn't get involved too aggressively as he tried to do in the past with the health care bill related to, you know, the repeal and replace for the Affordable Care Act. He was a little more aggressive with, not only the glad handing, but of course the arm twisting, with individuals who were not lining up the way they wanted them to, and of course in the end it didn't work out for the health care bill. But it turned out to be that as the more time goes on here, the actual Affordable Care Act, the bill itself, is gaining more and more support. It's become actually more popular among the public. And the congressmen, senators, going home to their constituencies, suddenly were getting a real major earful you know, over time. Every time they went home, they would try to hold some of these town meetings and things like that. And they were getting beaten up rather badly by people. They were discovering that voting against the Affordable Care Act or eliminating a great many of the key features of it, there are some key features that are quite popular, some of which ultimately are among the more costly elements of it. These are the areas that the Republicans would like to get rid of, save that money, maybe put that towards other things, including tax cuts, corporate tax cuts, or tax cuts for the top 3 to 5% of Americans. It's going to be a hard sell on the Senate side, though. So they got the tax bill on its own merits this time. The legislation, I mean, we got the questions I got here when I came into the show tonight were, what's in it? What does it mean? And of course, to try to get a sense of whether we think it actually has the enough legs to it that it can actually, you know, run. Can they actually make? Can it get through the legislature this time and actually find its way to the president's desk? Well, that's premature right now, unfortunately. But we thought we would share with you, based upon some very good research by a staff writer with the Washington Post, Heather Long. She put together a report that gives us the bullet points, you know, on what at least what it was passed today. In the House of Representatives. The legislation itself would affect pretty much every American household and business owner in some way. The bill was first introduced back on the 2nd of November and was voted on just 2 weeks later, leaving little time for any kind of real analysis or debate on the 440-page legislation, which, of course, is one of the complaints that the people who are challenging the bill are that, you know, the stuff is done in the dark behind closed doors. There's no debate on it, no discussion on it. There's no hearings being held, you know, no ability to go in and make improvements. And certainly it's not created as a bipartisan effort. We've got to get to the point here politically where people realize that you've got to get bipartisan legislation passed. In other words, both sides have got to pass legislation. It has to be supported. Have to be enough things in it that the Democrats like and enough things in it that the Republicans like that it's viewed as bipartisan. Otherwise, you know, as we go through this roller coaster cycle of who's in control of the House and the Senate and the White House, if suddenly they do a poor job at a given area, okay, then suddenly the Republicans lose control of the White House and then the Democrats get voted back in and now they're in control. And what are they going to do? Well, they're probably going to unravel a lot of the things they really hate that was put into place by just the Republicans or just... Or like in the case we see right now, it seems like this president, Trump, and some of the leadership in the House and Senate are the Republicans that simply want to unravel and undo anything that had Donald Trump, I mean, that had Barack Obama's name on it. And I'm not even sure they're looking to see whether it's good, bad, or ugly, or what the public thinks. They just think it has a, you know, let's just undo anything that, you know, that the 8 years of Obama, you know, created. That sounds like an overly harsh statement, but there's a little bit of throwing the baby out with the bathwater as part of that mix. And it's, by the way, it's not a psychology unique to the Republicans. The Democrats do the same thing when they come into place, when they come into order. And a lot of those executive orders coming out of the White House that you hear about, Obama did a lot of them, and now Donald Trump's doing a lot of them. And but those things are the easiest things to change also when a new president steps in. So you got to be careful. I don't like to see government wasting our money or wasting our time also. And we need to get some things done. The next step, of course, now that the House was able to finally pass some version of tax reform legislation, tax cut legislation, the next step is, of course, the Senate. And it has to, you know, it's going to pass its version of a tax bill. And then both chambers will have to take both versions and the terms they call reconcile them, try to figure out, you know, what their substantial differences are in both bills. They're not identical by a long shot, and figure out whether or not there are elements to both bills that should be held onto, that should be supported. The main goal of the House's Tax Cut and Jobs Act, as they call it, is to lower taxes on companies in an effort to make them more competitive and to discourage them from moving overseas, which is a tax strategy for many corporations. The bill reduces the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20% and the rate for pass-through businesses down to 25% with some restrictions. Many families would also pay less, although Speaker Ryan has admitted that won't be the case for everyone. And we'll give you a little bit of a rundown of what is actually in the final version of this bill that got passed this afternoon. We'll do that when I come back after this quick break. I'm Don Sowa. You are listening to the Money Talk program here on AM 790, your home of talking business. Talking a little bit about, well, the tax bill was passed by the House of Representatives today, and we'll try to identify where, if anything, there are major differences with the potential Senate bill. And is any of this possible to get passed by both houses and eventually find its way to the president's desk? We'll figure it out. We'll be right back. This is your home of talk and business, AM 790.
A painter should begin every canvas with a wash of black, because all things in nature are dark except where exposed by the light. Leonardo da Vinci. WPRI 12 and The Road Show are proud to partner once again with Waterfire Providence. Join us by the river this summer as we transform and inspire our community. Do your part in keeping the fires burning by donating to Waterfire at waterfire.org today.
This is Amy from Moriarty's Fence, the Invisible Fence brand pet safety experts. The Invisible Fence brand works for all dogs, all breeds, all ages. We start training puppies as young as 10 to 12 weeks old, and we also keep cats safe at home too. The key to our 27 years of success is our customer service and pet training support. Our installed outdoor safety solutions start as low as $7.99 and can be customized for your property. Call 800-225-0808 for a free design and pet consultation visit, or schedule online at MoriartysFence.com. At Moriarty's Fence, we work hard so you can rest easy knowing your pet is safe at home.
But it just makes sense.
And it's Invisible.
It's the fence that makes sense. Get the Invisible Fence.
Moriarty's Fence, 800-225-0808. Keeping pets safe since 1986. Moriarty's Fence reminds you to support your local shelter, adopt, volunteer, donate.
Men, are you tired of those daily blue enhancement pills that take days, weeks, or months to work, if they ever work at all? Listen up. Now you can take Red, the new natural male empowerment pill that works on demand. Even your partner will notice the difference the very first time you use it. To prove Red won't disappoint like the others, you're invited to participate in our nationwide I Take Red Partner Reaction Guarantee Trial. We're seeking participants for this nationwide trial, not only to prove it works the very first time you try it, we guarantee your partner will also notice the difference. Forget those slow-acting blue pills and join those who proudly take Red. Over 50,000 pills have already been claimed and supplies are limited. So to ensure your participation in this free nationwide trial, you must call now.
Superior Virility On Demand. You only need to take Red once to see what all the fuss is about. Call immediately to participate in our free nationwide trial. Call 800-588-0769. 800-588-0769. Be one of thousands to proudly say, I take Red. 800-588-0769.
Selfless service is the guiding principle that drives Army National Guard soldiers to be always ready whenever disaster strikes. They are your next-door neighbors and your colleagues in schools, offices, and factories. To be a Guard soldier is to stand ready to serve at all times for family, for community, and for country. To learn more, log on to NationalGuard.com or contact an Army National Guard recruiter in your area.
Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard. Aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
This is Money Talk with Don Soa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you to the second half of tonight's Money Talk program. My name is Don Soa. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm a certified financial planner professional and the host of the Money Talk program for the last, 26 years or so. Yeah, I'm getting old. It's funny, we did try to figure out, looking back at the numbers, that's just shy of 6,500 shows. You know, I was asking Maya, I says, you know, Maya, our producer here, said, what were you doing 26 years ago? She says, I was dead. I was still dead. She says, she hasn't been drinking very long, although there are moments when she probably should drink more. Regardless of how you do it. But it's interesting how many people I talk to people who ask questions about the show or even call in or leave messages for potential topics for the program. How many of them weren't around? And I find that amazing. They actually were not born yet when we started doing the show. And I don't know. I hope that lends credibility to the reason we're still here, because I don't think we'd still be on the air here in Southern New England if people didn't find the show helpful and useful, which is why we're here. We're here to educate and I'm hoping give you enough information that you become, well, number one, a better informed consumer and financial decision maker. It's not all about the stock market and investments. A lot of it is about financial planning philosophy, understanding who you are, understanding about cash flow, understanding what it means to compare your income with your outflows, inflows and outflows. So those aren't accounting terms. Those are personal money management terms that you need to know about. It'll certainly help you as you get better. You'll understand who you are financially, and that's a big part of the reason that we're here. We also talk about some of the history to understand how things did. Well, how did we get to where we are today? Things like the Federal Reserve, which is our central bank here in the United States, it didn't just appear overnight. There were reasons why it occurred. Shortly after the Depression back in the 20s, late 20s, 29, 1929, the crash of 29, in the period that followed, there were reasons for the rules that we live by, the various regulatory acts that are intended to put some levels of control on the banks and the financial markets on Wall Street and around the world. There's some level of regulatory consideration there. It's all about protecting the public because, yes, there are people out there who will use their ability, their knowledge, and their opportunity to, well, let's say, establish an unfair advantage on people who are just trying to do the best they can with what they've got. So, you know, investment advisors have rules that we have to live by, too. That's really what it's all about, helping you to understand what your rights are. And quite frankly, the old phrase, let the buyer beware, you've heard that. We're trying to minimize that a little bit, but how can you beware if you don't understand how things work? So part of the Money Talks program is to educate you in those areas as well. And very importantly, to help you formulate really good questions. We think the best and most important financial decisions, whether they be retirement planning related, education funding related, how you handle your debt, and certainly what you do with those hard-earned dollars. If you're working with a financial advisor, you have to know how to ask questions. You have to formulate them. That makes you a better partner in that relationship with that advisor, right? Well, the main goal of the House's Tax Cut and Jobs Act, as we call it, is, of course, to lower taxes. The main goal, taxes on companies in an effort to make them more competitive. The bill, as I mentioned, reduces the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%. Many families may also see some benefit. Many families would also probably pay a little bit less in taxes, although the Speaker Ryan, did in fact admit that not everybody is going to benefit from this. Not all homes, not all households will see a reduction in their tax liability. One of the things that probably has been left in the House bill that surprised me a little bit, because I thought it was something they're going to really push for, and that was keeping the individual mandate a key element of the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare. The House voted on a tax bill only. They wanted to interject and include it. As somebody once said years ago, one of the ways to get a difficult piece of legislation passed in Congress is to slip it between the sheets, so to speak, between the pages of a very long, very large, very complex bill that ultimately people want to see enacted. They want to see the bill enacted, but there may be some key pieces of legislation which are confusing and maybe not popular for everyone. So how does a senator or a congressman get that bill passed, that piece of the pie that they're looking for, slip it in between the sheets, so to speak? Well, the Senate bill, now remember, we're talking about the House bill here that passed this afternoon. The Senate bill includes a provision that would scrap the legal requirement that almost all Americans have to buy health insurance or pay some sort of a penalty to the Internal Revenue Service when you do your taxes. That's what they call the individual mandate rule. That was going to raise some money. If you eliminated that, the expectation was that could raise over $300 billion that could be used for other elements and help to pay for some of the things that they wanted to do in the new tax bill. The House of Representatives decided not to touch that provision. And remember, the House is the ones that deal more directly with their constituents. Each member of the House has 700,000 or 800,000 voters that they deal with, and it's a smaller constituency. Certainly senators, there's two of them for each state. Depending how big the state is, that can be a lot of people. So the Senate, some people believe, and some people feel that maybe this is unfair, but they do believe that ultimately senators are not as in touch with their rank-and-file constituents, their voters back home. They're not as in touch. They don't understand exactly how most of them feel and how robust those feelings are. Are they aggressive? Do they feel strongly about it? But members of the House, you know, there's a lot more of them, and they are representing a much smaller territory within the country. And large, I would imagine their constituents are a little more active in engaging their congressmen and women. So anyway, the House isn't touching the mandate requirement, which may lead to a bit of a showdown between the two chambers if they have to resolve their very different versions of the bill. And some of the issues behind it are not whether they like the mandate or not. It's a question of the people that support the idea of eliminating that mandate are they know that it's going to be problematic on a number of different levels. It's going to cause a lot of people to lose their health insurance, which may not be a good idea. However, they want to raise the capital. They want money. Now, who else wins with the bill? Well, big businesses do. The House bill cuts the top rate that large corporations pay from 35% to 20%. Now, that's the biggest one-time drop in the big business tax rate ever. It is a permanent change that does not expire. There's not a sunset provision on it. You hear that all the time. On top of that, companies would get some new tax breaks to help lower their bills, their tax bills, such as the ability to deduct all the costs of purchasing new equipment for about 5 years instead of having to, you know, amortize it over a long period of time, as well as a special low rate on any money that they bring back to the United States from low tax countries such as Ireland overseas. In other words, a lot of corporations are leaving their foreign dollars, you know, overseas. Now, they'll pay taxes in those local markets overseas in Europe and elsewhere, but in some cases, the tax rate's lower, and they're not going to actually pay taxes on that revenue unless they bring it back to the United States. Now, if they don't bring it back to the United States, there's some restrictions on how they can use the money at the corporate level. They're not going to be allowed to distribute that capital that's generated in their overseas businesses. They're not going to distribute that capital in the form of dividends to shareholders. They can't use the money to buy at the corporate level to buy back shares, all things which shareholders like to see happen. There's a lot of uses of that money in terms of reinvestment in capital spending and other things that they cannot do while they're leaving the money overseas. Now, yes, they can use the money for overseas projects, but again, there are limits to these things. So the government has been looking for, and by the way, this is not a brand new strategy. We've heard this before in the past. Sometimes people talk about a one-time tax holiday for corporations, bring it back within this upcoming tax year, and you'll be taxed at a very specialized rate as opposed to, you know, the higher rates that they would normally pay. Now, they would get to bring that money home under this provision at a marginally low tax rate of 12%. Now, part of the reason why they have to go with such a low number is because those companies are not going to be absolved from paying taxes within the countries they're already in. So if you moved your money to somewhere in Great Britain or to Ireland or to Europe, any of the other European countries, yes, whatever the tax rate is they have, the corporation will still pay that on their local revenue. But when they take that same money and the term is repatriation, bring it back to the United States, you'd have to have a fairly attractive rate because it's going to be added on to whatever rate they're paying in Europe. The entire business tax system would also change, by the way, from a worldwide system in which money anywhere around the globe is taxed to a territorial system, in which it's mostly money made in the United States that is taxed. Businesses have long lobbied for this particular change. Now, small businesses are going to get what we call a mini win. The National Federation of Independent Businesses, the largest small business lobby out there, initially was against the House bill, but Republicans made some major changes, and now the NFIB, Federation of Independent Businesses, is giving its blessing on it. 95% of American businesses are organized as pass-through companies, either as LLCs or as S-corps or partnerships as opposed to C-corps, and they pass through the business income to the owner's tax return. We're going to see some changes there as well. We'll talk about that when I come back from this quick break. You're listening to the Money Talk program, and I'm Don Sowa. We're talking about what's happening in the tax bill that was passed today Does it have any chance of finding its way through the Senate? I'll be right back.
Sponsored by ShopVac. Got a big mess that needs to be cleaned up? Hurry down to Lowe's to pick up your ShopVac brand wet-dry vacuum with new advanced motor technology, starting at just $79.
With the Bloomberg Small Business Report, I'm John Tucker. A change in the Senate plan that would expand a temporary income tax break for partnerships, limited liability companies, and other so-called pass-through businesses has won the endorsement of a national small business group. The change would raise the income thresholds for owners of firms that could take full advantage of a 17.4% deduction on their business income, setting the levels at $250,000 for single individuals and $500,000 for joint filers. The owners would then pay income taxes at their individual rates. The original Senate plan had set those thresholds at $75,000 and $150,000. The National Federation of Independent Business now strongly supports the measure as revised. That's according to an emailed statement from Juanita Dugan, the group's president. And that's today's Bloomberg Small Business Report. I'm John Tucker.
Dell's Small Business Black Friday sale is on now with the lowest prices of the year. Shop huge doorbusters on the latest business PCs with Intel Core processors, plus top brand electronics and accessories. Just call 877-BUY-DELL. Did we mention there's free shipping on everything? For the year's absolutely lowest prices, don't miss out on these Black Friday doorbusters for small business. Just visit Dell.com/SBBlackFriday or call 877-BUY-DELL.
Hi, I'm Darla from CentOS.
Oh, thank goodness you're here. We have so much to do. I need fire extinguishers, right?
We'll place them for you and be out for regular inspection.
Great. And what about my new hires?
We'll get them into uniforms and keep them looking sharp.
What about this first aid cabinet?
Fully stocked.
It wasn't this morning.
It is now. And so are the restrooms.
Wow, CentOS really seems to know what we need.
You said it.
Oh, I'm ready!
Learn how CentOS can help you get ready for the workday. Visit CentOS.com.
Don't do what I did and run out.
If it's working, don't quit. Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished?
You've got to feed them right for life.
Dynavite is nutrition.
If I ever took Roy off of Dynavite.
No.
When I get to about three quarters.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite.
Oh, no. I've got a couple more scoops.
It's time to place my order. Dynavite.com.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite for your dog this week.
We'll send you a bottle of Super Mega fish oil free.
Packed with omega-3, DHA, and EPA fatty acids.
Super Mega is great for your dog's immune system, healthy skin, and soft, shiny fur.
Try Super Omega Fish Oil.
Free this week at Dynavite.com.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
This is Money Talk with Don Soa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Now, who would have known when they set up the Bloomberg Small Business Report that that's exactly what we'd be talking about on tonight's Money Talk show? As I mentioned, the House plan lowers the top rate for these owner-owned small businesses that are pass-through businesses like S-Corps, partnerships, and limited liability corporations, LLCs, moving a top rate from 39.6 down to 25. And that does exclude certain types of service companies, lawyers, consultants, probably people like me. But it requires a complex formula where the roughly 25% rate only applies to about 30% of the business's income. But the reality is, you know, most small businesses, maybe 85% of them, already pay rates that are lower than the 25% that they're talking about. So to help out, there are some of the small businesses they call the mom-and-pop type companies. The final bill really has a roughly 9% rate on it, and that's on. But of course, on the first $75,000 of income for those business owners who are making perhaps $150,000 or less. Now, that tax break phases in, meaning it isn't fully available until the year 2022. Again, they're always arguing about how we pay for this stuff. Now, who's going to do really, really well in this? Well, rich people. The wealthy get a lot of benefits under the new bill. The estate tax, which is paid only when property and other assets worth over, say, $5.5 million are passed on to their heirs. the death tax, they sometimes refer to that, estate tax. Well, guess what? That $5.5 million number doubles to about $11 million in 2018. It goes up to around $22 million for couples, meaning a lot fewer people have to actually pay it. So, I mean, this is obviously for very wealthy families. And the estate tax goes away entirely in the year 2024. Now, that was another debate, was just to get rid of it. The mega wealthy also would get to keep charitable deductions, a popular way that lowers their tax bills, and they no longer would have to pay the alternative minimum tax, the AMT. I agree. I think that's a great idea. And I think keeping charitable deductions in place is really important, because a large number of people are taken care of in this country because of charitable givings, whether it's charitable organizations, the churches, you name it. There are a lot of people that are fed, clothed, and provided with so many different levels of complex care by charitable organizations who need to be supported. Eliminating the deductibility to people who are inclined to give major gifts, that would be terrible, and it would create more problem and more cost, honestly, for the government and taxpayers than it would help. A safeguard against excessive tax dodging is called the AMT. It's been in place since 1969. It has been kind of an inefficient place. Some wealthy business owners would be able to actually take advantage of the lower pass-through rate as well. Overall, the Tax Policy Center found that half of the benefits of this bill are going to go to the top 1% by the year 2027, and that 80% of the benefits of the bill will go to the top 2%. Donald Trump would probably benefit a lot, according to the estimates. The Washington Post explained many parts of this bill do, in fact, help Trump directly or indirectly. One of the interesting ones is that the lower 25% pass-through rate would apply to all income for passive real estate investors like Donald Trump, a much better deal than most active pass-through business owners would actually get. Real estate developers will have a better advantage. Now, most Americans pay the same or lower taxes right until about the year 2023. There'll be minor changes. For the next 5 years, the vast majority of Americans, maybe 92%, would either pay less or see little change, according to official estimates from the Joint Committee on Taxation. But that shifts sharply after 5 years. In 2023, about 40% of Americans would pay less. 22% would pay more. Now, after 2023, a key middle-class tax break goes away. Many of the people facing tax hikes are solidly middle-class, people in the $40,000 to $75,000 a year income range, or else in the upper middle class, which is $200,000 to $400,000 range. A key savings for the middle class, the Family Flexibility Credit, that actually goes away in 2022. The House bill also uses a low measure for inflation after 2022, leaning more and more people start to jump from 12% tax bracket to the 25% bracket, which starts to kick in at around $67,500 for heads of household. Higher income earners are impacted by the elimination of numerous itemized deductions, for example, for those who do itemize. Taxes will get a little bit simpler for quite a few people. The House bill collapses the 7 tax brackets the country has down to about 4, a 12%, 25%, 35%, and a 39.6% bracket. The top rate becomes a millionaire's rate, applying to income of $1 million or more a year for couples and $500,000 or more for individuals. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of income for someone to actually make. In an effort to simplify, the House bill also does away with many of the credits and deductions and replaces them with a larger standard deduction, a slightly larger child tax credit, $1,600 per child versus $1,000 now, and a new family flexibility credit worth $300 a year for individuals and $600 for couples. The larger standard deduction means the first $12,000 of individual incomes are exempted, and $24,000 for couples is so for a couple would be tax free. So those things are outright credits, not deductions. Say goodbye to most deductions. Almost all itemized deductions are going away, except for 3. The final House bill keeps the deduction for charitable donations, thankfully. Property taxes are going to still be deductible up to $10,000 a year, and the mortgage interest deduction stays in place. So the mortgage interest deduction would be capped at around $500,000 for mortgages, which is down from $1 million right now. That does provide a benefit to most Americans who actually have mortgages on their homes. About 30% of filers do, in fact, itemize. Most of those people who itemize claim the state and local tax deduction, SALT, where they deduct their state and local sales, income, and property taxes. Very important for big states, especially like New York City, which not only has federal income tax, they have state income tax, and they have city income tax. Unbelievable. A person can pay a lot of money in taxes if you live in Manhattan. Now, they deduct their state, local, and income property taxes. Under the House bill, only the property deduction would remain. This hurts people living in high-tax places. Many times they're blue states like New Jersey, New York, and California. That's going to be a big problem, I think, dealt with when they get into the Senate with this. Several GOP representatives from these states plan to vote no on the bill, probably in protest. Gives you some sense of perspective. So, say goodbye to the deduction for moving expenses. That goes away in 2018. Say goodbye to being able to write off the cost of your tax preparer, that service. That goes away in 2018. Say goodbye to the deduction for medical expenses. That's a big deal. It goes away in 2018. Those are for people who have fairly large medical bills that they cannot actually, that are not covered by their insurances. Say goodbye to tax credits for, you know, for plug-in motor vehicles. It gets repealed in 2018. That was really offered initially as an incentive to get people to go with electric cars. Say goodbye to most tax benefits for college. At the moment, low and middle income Americans deduct up to $2,500 a year in student loan interest. That's going to pretty much be going away too. The American Opportunity Tax Credit would remain for students, which allows a $2,000 credit for higher educational expenses. It's going to be complicated. We'll be, as we get more and more details in it, if it's finally reconciled with the Senate, we'll be talking about it a lot here on the Money Talk program. Hey, folks, have a good evening tonight. In the meantime, tune in tomorrow at 5. Steve Bovay will be here to close out the week right here on Money Talk. Drive safely and have a wonderful evening.
Hello? Anyone there?
Hey! United Healthcare heading your way.
Thank goodness.
Lost in the giant Medicare maze?
It's so complicated.
No worries. United Healthcare has the people, tools, and plans to get you through it, including the only Medicare plans with the AARP name.
I'm so glad you found me.
Need to find a Medicare plan? Get help now at UHCMedicare.com. AARP Medicare plans from United Healthcare. United Healthcare pays royalty fees to AARP. AARP is not an insurer.
Are we ready to open next month?
I think so.
You think so?
Well, it's complicated. Fire protection, first aid supplies, uniforms, safety training, mat services. Oh, and restroom supplies.
So uncomplicated. Call Cintas. They'll handle all of it.
Wow. One company can handle all that? That's not very complicated.
So, you'll be ready?
Oh, we'll be ready.
Oh, I'm ready!
Learn how Cintas can help you get ready for the workday. Visit Cintas.com.
When I grow up, I want to be a rock star.
I want to be a fireman.
I want to be a baseball player.
I'll be a chef.
Cause it's like the coolest job ever.
You get to ride around in a giant Bosch, cause chefs get to cook